Well, the work that we have in the centre is focused on four areas of major social concern. So we have work on the environmental crisis, we have work on, generally speaking, ethics and economics, work on penal reform, but probably the work that we're most famous for is the stuff that we've done on the housing crisis, particularly through the work of Peter McVerry and the Peter McVerry Trust. So day in, day out in the office, what we're seeing is the consequences of decades, really, of bad decision making from the Irish government and a policy environment where nobody is satisfied. I'm employed as a theologian who works with these social scientists who are analysing all of these trends and these statistics. And I find, much to my surprise sometimes, that the scriptures have direct relevance to these contemporary issues.
Yeah, because you're going right back from Genesis right up to Revelation and 2,000 years ago, and then if we go into the Old Testament, much more than 2,000 years.
Yeah, so even though they're ancient texts and they were written in radically different contexts, in different languages, they still have this amazing relevance and resonance for today. The story begins, as pretty much everybody still knows, with the Garden of Eden, and that's the story of eviction, which is depressingly something that thousands of people in Ireland are either living through or day and night they're in fear of.
And it's eviction by God. But
yeah, I mean, it is eviction by God, but that story then is an interesting one. What a great setup for divine revelation. And what you find from that point onwards is humanity is constantly questing and searching, seeking out a sense of home. And that's a recurring motif right through the Old Testament, right through the Psalms, right through the prophets, and into the New Testament. You find that Jesus, Mary and Joseph are refugees right from the get-go. And at the very end of the story in the book of Revelation, which is one of those books I think that most people are terrified of, but when you read it, you see that the final chapters of the Bible are about God making his home with us. So I'm very interested in how theology and how the scriptures can inform our positions on social questions in realistic ways, not just in the old-fashioned doctrinaire kind of legalistic approaches, but in ways that can be life-giving. And so I think that considering the scriptures as a story about the quest for home has real relevance for Ireland today, where we are in the middle of a critical housing crisis.
What in this Lenten retreat then would you be saying to people who would be praying through this on a weekly basis? What have you learned that they might learn or reflect on or might be given to them, whether or not they're homeless?
Whether you come to the biblical text as someone who's a devout believer or a concerted agnostic or even an active atheist, it's almost a universal experience that human beings, when they're pushed to the edge, cry out. And that's often our most authentic form of prayer. And if we reflect on our lives, what we often recollect is that those moments of crisis when we cry out to God or whoever might be listening, that's a cry of abandonment. So there's a homelessness that's built into all of our experiences. Not necessarily a literal material homelessness where you're living on the street, but a sense of dislocation from yourself, from your neighbour, from creation. So as we read the scriptures as Christians, if we read it in that light, we find this contact point whereby our experience in the moments of our crisis start to resonate with the experience of people who are actively homeless today. And it all centres for me around Jesus, because we worship a homeless Christ. The text is very clear. Jesus himself says he has no place to lay his head. So in the secular sphere, we can talk in meaningful ways about how we ought to support the people who are marginalised, people who are oppressed, people who are poor. And that's all good. But Christianity gives us this kind of three-dimensional understanding of that, because if Christ is our brother, which is a basic claim Christians share, he is homeless. We have this experience of existential homelessness. And between those two points, we're able to reach out to the third point, which is our actual concrete neighbour, who is in flesh and blood, sleeping in a doorway tonight. So to the extent that we are devoted to Jesus, we are compelled to serve the person who is insufficiently housed, to use the technical language. So I think that reading the Bible in this way has an absolutely practical relevance for how we spend our time, how we spend our money, how we act in the ballot box. It ought to order how we organise our lives.
You say there about how we ought to act in the ballot box, for example, and how we spend our lives. I think it's fair to say that ordinary people in Ireland are really shocked at our housing crisis. They made it an issue in the previous election. Politicians were almost surprised that they were going to the doors and people were bringing up all over the country the issue of homelessness. What is it, and is there anything in your reading of the Bible that gives you an insight into why structurally, politically, and Peter McVey had said this, it's not even getting better, it's actually getting worse. We have resolutely failed to get a handle on this situation.
Again, I mean, it's amazing to work as a theologian in Ireland in 2018 when it appears as if the relevance of the church and Christianity is receding, and that's definitely true and not necessarily always a bad thing. But the relevance of the scriptures are as sharp as ever, because what we're finding is that if you organise the provision of housing around greed, then you will have systematic dysfunction. The prophet Isaiah, in the beginning of his lamentation, he says, "Woe to you who pile house onto house until there's no more space in the land." And it's a perfect description of where we were in 2008, having massively wasted our Celtic Tiger surplus in this property bubble. And now 10 years later, we're in a situation where we don't have enough houses, but we still have the property bubble. There is a couple of hundred people across the country on any given night who are rough sleeping. There's almost 10,000 people, including many thousands of children, who are homeless. And then you have people who are well established in life, who have jobs, but who find that they're not able to afford housing. So young people especially are paying rental rates that are unsustainable. And young families are again being priced out of ever being able to own your own house.
I'm conscious that there are people around the country where the house prices have collapsed or they can't rent a house. But people can't live there because the jobs aren't available, and the centralisation and push to Dublin mainly isn't working either.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really important point that even as we enter into this new property bubble and all the problems that's going to generate, the old problems still exist. So you have almost 100,000 people who are in mortgage arrears and 100,000 people who are in negative equity. My dad grew up in South Leitrim in a farm outside a tiny little town called Mohill. And as you drive that path, you find at least 10 abandoned houses and loads of vacant properties all around South Leitrim and all around the west of Ireland. But nobody can live there because the jobs are all in the urban centres. That's one of those big, massive policy questions that requires real creativity and long-term planning. And all that we have instead is the pursuit of the next quarter's figures. And when you think about how the economy in Ireland functions, so much of it relies on the legal fees that come from the housing market, the construction sector, and then the tax income that comes from the buying and selling of property. So we're massively disproportionately overbalanced towards the buying and selling of houses. So if we were to think about this Christianly, we'd be thinking in a much longer term, and we'd be thinking about things in terms of the common good, not in terms of private good.
What does the Bible then, if I'm going to say, right, I pray this retreat now for 6 weeks, what will I be going through in those 7 weeks that you've outlined, and what is the Bible saying to me about my reflection and perhaps my change of heart?
Well, the retreat takes us right through the scriptures from the beginning to the end. So we reflect on how our sense of disorientation and dislocation in life begins in the story of the Garden of Eden. Once the story moves on in the Bible, you come very quickly to Abraham, who is the father, of course, of Christianity, Judaism and Islam. And that story is remarkable in the text, because he's a pagan, he's the son of a pagan, the grandson of a pagan. He's just living out there in Ur, in the city where there's no knowledge of God. And suddenly a voice comes to him, and the voice says, "Leave your father's home." So God compels yet again. The character is compelled out into homelessness. And that, I suppose, is what I'm arguing throughout the entire Lenten retreat, that God very often calls us into that position of dislocation because it's a necessary step on the journey towards home. And you see this in Exodus, the famous kind of the definitive story of the Bible is the children of Abraham are enslaved. God hears their suffering and begins the process of bringing them home. You see this in the prophets. We look at the second exile that happens later on in the scriptures, where Israel is called to live for the common good, but instead chooses to live for their own personal gain. And God says, you can't have your home if you're going to abuse your home. And then we look in Holy Week at Jesus as a prisoner, because again, we have 4,000 people who are imprisoned, who are away from their home. And it's really important for us to remember that we worship a God who spent his last night on earth in a jail cell. And then what I've tried to do is to extend the biblical reflection forward. So the week after Easter, when we have overdosed on chocolate and we're loving the fact that we're able to take back up the vices that we've given up for Lent, then I say, what now? And I look into this idea in the New Testament that reoccurs constantly, which is that Christians are the people who don't have a home. They are, to use the technical language in the text, resident aliens, always looking for the home that's across the sea. So I look at how useful it is for us to remember that we shouldn't be too comfortable in our place, in our time. And then finally, on Ascension Sunday, which is the end of Easter, we consider this passage at the end of the book of Revelation, which is the whole climax of the scriptures, where God makes a home with all of humanity, every tribe, every tongue. They're all welcomed back in. In the Garden of Eden, there was a tree around which the story rotates. And in the City of God, there's a tree at the gates of the city where, as people walk under the tree, the leaves of the tree heal them. And that's, again, metaphorical language to describe how this sense of abandonment is going to be redeemed. And we will ultimately all find our sense of home, but only when we are at home with God.